Morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today we're going to be walking you through three news stories that have popped over our news feeds in the last week or so. I want to apologize for those who were tuning in last Wednesday expecting a Midweek Roundup. I was unfortunately unable to conduct the roundup because I was in flight. Returning from a consult visit out at the University of Oregon. Looking forward to chatting with you today about some of these news stories. But first, before we get into that, I want to make everyone aware, for those that are new to the roundup, who we are at SMIE Consulting. That's Social Media and International Education Consulting, a company I set up 5 years ago when I left Education USA to allow me to do consulting work for clients around the world, but also to help better serve the U.S. higher education community as they develop their international enrollment strategic plan. And so what I'd like to do is first share the website for SMIE Consulting, and I do that over in the comments section over on the Facebook page. For those that are listening on the podcast, thanks for subscribing, and it's always a pleasure to get your feedback on the roundups and how you're listening to them, and how you're finding the news that you're hearing each week productive for you. So if you are interested in the podcast, you can subscribe on any of your major podcasting providers, from iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and Spotify. So hoping that those will allow you some chance to catch up when you have a little downtime, or while you're on a walk or run. Hopefully find the information useful for you in your work. Where you may be wondering these news stories come from each week. I've had a number of people ask over the last few months where I get my stories, and a lot of them will come week to week from the Chronicle or Inside Higher Ed, but usually they're getting their stories from other places as well. So I cast the net fairly wide, and to do that, I produce a newsletter each Monday that comes out Monday morning, 9 a.m., called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And that comes out with a summary of about 12 to 15 different stories related to international education, and then about four or five social media related stories. That's an area of the business that I think a lot of universities and colleges don't leverage enough internationally. And we talk through some of those stories on the newsletter. But we do pick three of those stories from the newsletter each week to feature here on the Midweek Roundup. And today, we're going to be taking a look at those. But for those who want to subscribe to the newsletter, I've also dropped the link to that in the comments section on the Facebook page as well. So I encourage you all to take a look at that if you're not already subscribed. Now, I do want to take a moment to reflect on the last couple of weeks in international education. This is a time of year when obviously new students are arriving. You've had over a year oftentimes to get in touch with these students and develop relationships with them. And now is a point where they start arriving on your campuses. The advisors or counselors you've been working with overseas have become a big part of your life. And in terms of the most eagerly anticipated time of the year is when new students arrive on campus. Certainly for me, as someone who'd worked on campuses at five different institutions, orientation was always the most exciting time for me, when getting to see those faces full of excitement, full of jet lag, but also just a real joy of being at their destination that they've been longing to reach for so long. So first news story is related to that. And for those of you, Ahmad, thanks for joining, one of my former international students at Marquette University. Glad to see you, Ahmad. Hope you are well, and hope your family is as well. I've got some beautiful child there. And I I remember, now that Ahmad's on, I remember the orientation program, having met him and his father when I was overseas on a recruitment trip, and finally getting the opportunity to welcome him to campus. That was just an amazing time. And this is certainly something this time of year, with orientations going on across the country, that there's a lot of excitement, but there's also a lot of uneasiness, particularly for students that are coming new to the country, but also returning students. And I turn to this news story, and we think about this every so often at this time of year, but we don't realize just the true impact of it. There's a couple of stories that are somewhat related, but the first one is related to the Palestinian refugee student who'd gone through Education USA in Lebanon, where his family had settled, and had been gone through the competitive college club, the incredible program developed through Education USA advising centers around the world. But the center in Lebanon through Ahmed East had done such incredible work with him, and through the competitive college club, he actually lived. Had to take a train to come to from Tyre to come to Beirut for his program. But he had been admitted to Harvard, and he was all set. Got his visa this summer and was set and ready to come. And he was initially denied entry to the United States in Boston when he landed to start his educational career at Harvard. There is a silver lining here we'll get to, but we all know that this past summer, at the beginning of the summer, around Memorial Day, the DS-160 form began to include questions on social media, that students had to list their social media accounts that they'd had the presence on over the last 5 years. That's now standard practice for all students that are applying, or all non-immigrant visa applicants to the United States have to go through this. But now what you're seeing, that's this student had gone through that process in with the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon, had been cleared and obviously issued a visa for any if there had been any concerns at that point. But now this student enters the United States, and the Customs and Border Patrol officers in Logan Airport in Boston detained him and eventually deported him. The reason given, at least from the student's perspective, was that social media posts of his friends on a particular social media platform were negative about the United States. And as a result, he said that's why he was deported. We don't know the CBP side. They don't ever comment on these kind of individual cases. But if that's the case, then that's certainly beyond the pale as far as I'm concerned. It's an overreach on the part of CBP officers involved, and certainly one that should trouble all of us. It's not an isolated incident. That there have been other reports in Los Angeles of students being detained and then deported, Chinese students especially. There's a group of nine that were returning to come back to Arizona State University that were deported after re-entry. They were not allowed entry, and there's stories coming out of that. Some of this had to do with them being entrapped by or forced to admit by CBP officers that they had cheated on exams or cheated on an IELTS test or something, or a TOEFL exam at some point. Obviously, that's very concerning, and that a student that had already been admitted, had already come and studied in the United States, is being denied reentry, even though they had valid visas. And these kind of issues are really concerning, I think, from obviously everybody's perspective, from the U.S. institutional perspective, from the overseas advising perspective, from the institutions and schools that these students might have come from originally, but it casts a lot of doubt on the system and whether or not it's really set up to allow them to succeed. So a lot of concern here that is being reflected across the message boards. We're thinking maybe for these Chinese students it was STEM related because of extra scrutiny that they've been given, that their visas but all of this group of nine, their visas were revoked. They were forced to return home. They were not all STEM. Maybe one or two of them were. So this is a real issue, I think, for a lot of institutions now that are grappling with, why is the line moving, and why is there such uncertainty, where there used to be much more black and white on these kinds of issues. So some of that is going to be down to how CBP officers are trained and what latitude that they're given. Seems to me that they're given a great deal of latitude in this respect, in terms of a line officer. And then their supervisors when they take a student into secondary for further investigation. So this is something that I think is a particular concern, and one that U.S. institutions and Certainly presidents have gotten involved, university presidents have gotten involved. Those that are following the story of the Harvard student that was denied entry. The good news is, after outreach from a variety of people, including the president of Harvard, and that that this allowed for his situation to be resolved, and he was readmitted to the United States, had his visa renewed by the embassy in Beirut, and he was able to come back and is now beginning his studies. So that's a bit of good news on an otherwise terrible story. That is, again, when you think all the potential options that international students have nowadays, and the opening of borders, opening of countries to international students on so many different levels, looking at Canada, Australia, the UK, New Zealand, even China, opening their doors to international students, and it seems, unfortunately, that these kinds of issues are putting some real obstacles, whether real or perceived. These obstacles are in place and causing a lot of ill will, I think, in the end. So action needs to be taken from the top, and certainly whether that happens from State Department level, certainly they've made overtures over the last couple of months to say that, for example, on the China issue, that no matter what's happening on the political level between our governments in terms of trade and negotiations there, Chinese students are always welcome here. There was a big speech at the Education USA Forum from the Deputy Assistant Secretary on this issue, on China specifically, and saying that actually visa rejection rates have gone down in China. So that there's the evidence that says, well, visa denial rates are down in China, but then you have these issues of these students being deported. So maybe that certainly doesn't reflect the State Department issue. That reflects CBP or Department of Homeland Security issue. So there's a lot of moving parts, obviously, with U.S. immigration these days, and that's something that certainly is well worth paying attention to as the time goes along. What I really wanted to lead with today, but since I had one of my former students on the line, I wanted to make sure I referenced the orientation, and that story just seemed to fit right there. But another very opposite reaction to this story is actually one of pure joy, and that was seeing a colleague of mine at Yale emailed this to me over the weekend and asked if I'd seen the story, and I said absolutely, and I'd definitely be including it in this week's roundup because frankly it's one that renews our hope in what is possible with students around the world, students who come from nothing, like the Palestinian refugee family of the student who's now at Harvard, went through a competitive college called got a full scholarship that allowed him to come to the United States for study. Those are the success stories that just warm your heart when you hear them. The second story is actually from a program that was created almost 20 years ago now by a former Education USA advisor, Rebecca Ziglimano, in Zimbabwe. And Rebecca, if you're out there, congratulations on and finally getting some well-deserved press, national press, through the New York Times. This article that came out over the weekend is just really warms your heart. And for those who know Rebecca, she's a tireless advocate for her students. And if you're on the university side, you've been asked to open your doors to her students, the USAP students, United States Achievers Program, that she created so many years ago, that have placed students around the globe, but it's at the best institutions in the United States. And she's been able to do that through her hard work and determination, but she will put it down to just the incredible talent that these students have and desire and drive that these students have in Zimbabwe, where she's based. But the program, the USAP program, has spawned in other countries as well, throughout Africa and other regions, that allow students in those countries who are from very disadvantaged situations. When I say disadvantaged, I'm not talking the adversity score of the College Board that may or may not exist anymore, but I'm talking about students who were families were farmers, herdsmen, or students who have lost both their parents to AIDS, as this student from that's now attending Columbia that's profiled in this New York Times story. Ricardo, glad you could join us too, all the way from Lisbon. Hope you're well in Portugal. Great to see you on as well. And these are the kind of stories through these USAP students, that are now doing great things, that have gone on after this initial undergraduate program, that come to the U.S. on this full ride scholarship, basically, through USAP and the universities that enroll them. But then so many of them have gone on to master's and doctoral level programs and completed them, and are now returning to Zimbabwe to help develop that country. And that was always Rebecca's dream for USAP, and I hope that continues. Long may it continue, because these are the kind of students that are just remarkable stories of determination and drive and success, and certainly need to be profiled as much as possible, and to show everybody else, all these other universities that wonder, why do we need to economically diversify our international student classes? These are the kind of students who you give the chance to, and with the drive that they have and the amount of obstacles that they've had to overcome, that you know that you're getting someone who is not gonna let themselves fail at your institution. They're going to thrive because they're going to be in hopefully a welcoming environment. They're going to have the support they need, and they're going to be not just from your institution, but from the network that has been set up to help support them. But they are going to be future leaders in their countries, and ultimately that's what you want. And the students that have pulled themselves up by their own with the help of universities that are recognizing the talent and that individual drive, these USAP students, competitive college club students that are not just in Lebanon but are across the Education USA network as well. We look at Opportunity Fund students, another Education USA program that have allowed so many students in similar circumstances to access U.S. higher education. You look at Simon Nascimento from Brazil, former Opportunity student that's gone on and is now an international admissions officer at the University of Chicago. And just incredible success stories that these kinds of programs really highlight that the talent that exists in this world that wants to come to the United States, and when the U.S. government puts in gives too much power to individuals to make decisions at the border or other places in the student flow, immigration flow, it really just hurts. It hurts your heart when you see these things happening, because you know what the opportunities that these students have to come to the U.S. For studies. We're lucky to have them, frankly. Yes, they're grateful that they're getting the opportunity, but our institutions, our country, is going to be better off because of these students coming to our shores. So much like the students that we see coming to our campuses that don't get the press. I wonder, though, we talk about this, these USAP students, but talk about the student from Lebanon that was denied and then finally has been admitted to the United States after public pressure to do so, and probably a lot of behind the scenes work too. You wonder what's happening with students who might be maybe those Arizona State students from China. Why were they denied reentry when they've been successfully studying as late as May this year at Arizona State? Well, why were they denied? Was this another CBP officer on a power trip, or what was the cause there? Were they looking for ways to trip students up rather than to keep those doors open and allow them to succeed here? You wonder about the students that might be going to smaller, lesser-known schools, about how their journey is going to be when they re-enter the United States, that were studying here in the spring or returning for fall studies. Are they going to get that same level of support from their university presidents or the embassies that had issued them visas in the first place? That's a little bit less of a known factor there. So I'm really curious, and I pray we don't have more of these stories popping on our news feeds and on social media groups look at the real damage that is doing to our country and to our international education prospects as a nation. So couple of in the end success stories, but certainly stories that highlight some real challenges with our current system and how our government is or is not making the effort needed to allow serious students with funding to come to these shores and fulfill their dreams, and not get into niggly bits on social media that's really have not, that have they've already been vetted once on the visa process before for initial students and anyone who's renewed their visa. They've gone through that DS-160 form and had to answer that social media questions and have been vetted before they come to the border. Why is this happening again? That's the piece that I don't get. Is there no communication that these students have gone through this with the CBP officers? Did they not realize this is now part of their journey, that these students are having to be vetted already once on the social media side before they come into the country? So some real questions that we don't have answers to at this point, and hopefully we do in the coming months, but won't hold my breath on that one. Now, last story I want to touch on today is one we've talked about China a number of times here on the Midweek Roundup, but we haven't really looked a lot at what's happening in terms of where they're getting their information about life in the United States and how political views are impacting their studies. And we're seeing more stories like this on what how Chinese students are actually finding out information about the United States, either before they get here or once they're here. And the sources, what we like to call fake, we learned to identify fake news stories, and there are algorithms to prove that now. But unfortunately, in China, that's not always the case. That's obviously with their media there, it's a lot of it is party-sponsored media or party-approved media in China. So we don't know. We know that unless they're getting access to the wider world through VPNs, what they're seeing is going to be very controlled. And the article that I'm referring to here is Chinese Students and Western Values. This is actually something that, if you're familiar with Karen Fisher, one of the lead international writers for the Chronicle of Higher Education, she now has a newsletter of her own, Latitudes, that comes out on Mondays. And in this most recent one from August 25th, actually not most, a week or two ago, she has the issue focused on Chinese students and Western values. It's talking in referencing Hong Kong here that starts with obviously Hong Kong has been a flashpoint for demonstrations now and some of the stress between mainland China and the national government and the semi-quasi-independent, not really, Hong Kong, a special administrative region. There have been numerous demonstrations of late that have by pro-democracy elements in Hong Kong, led by primarily by college students, high school and college students, that are initially the protests were related to getting a bill that had been introduced in the Hong Kong Parliament to allow for extradition of Hong Kong residents to mainland China for offenses there. So that was tabled eventually, and Carrie Lam, the director of Hong Kong's Special Administrative Region, today found out has pulled that bill completely off the docket for discussion in the legislature there. So will that quell the Chinese pro-democracy demonstrators there? We don't know, because that was one of the initial things. But what you're seeing now is that universities around the globe now, highlighting these protests in Hong Kong, you're seeing that mainland Chinese students have been taking the side of the Beijing government, and according to Karen's article, sometimes aggressively participating in counter demonstrations, trying to shout down those who disagree with them, And there were some posters that that Karen posted a tweet from somebody at Auburn University that were saying, shame on Hong Kong. What happened in Hong Kong is not peaceful protest against all acts of violence. And another one with a Chinese heading says, I support the Hong Kong police. You can all beat me now. You all can beat me now. So this is really, it's not just in U.S. institutions. I've seen other news stories where this is happening in Australia. It's happening in New Zealand for students that are taking, and if there were, for example, mainland Chinese students who were on these college campuses were becoming, were supporting the Hong Kong demonstrators against the mainland government, this caused them all sorts of grief. So for many, there's one story of a student's family back in Beijing being called in and being questioned by the authorities there after their son was found to have been participating in a pro-democracy protest on campus against the Chinese government. So for Chinese students, you gotta wonder, how are they actually being controlled by the information that they're getting? And Karen's story references the South China Morning Post and China, actually more so China Daily as one of the main news sources for Chinese students studying abroad, to keeping in touch with what's going on in Chinese opinion on education and other things, on politics. And it seems that China Daily is what Karen has identified as one of those potential fake news sources in China that don't paint a flattering picture of certainly all the time of the U.S. and U.S.-China relations, and certainly our pro-Chinese government mouthpiece in a lot of respects. So it's interesting to see where all this will go in the coming weeks and months. Obviously, China is an important source of students for not just the United States, but for Canada, for the UK, for Australia, New Zealand. Most of the other major English language destinations depend on China for anywhere from 25% to 40% of their international students in their countries. So relations, if they're going wrong at the top, it's going to filter down to student flows. We've seen the UK and Canada seeing an uptick over the last couple of years. Australia has been on a run with China. There's signs that might be changing there. There's a lot of public backlash against the over-reliance of Australian universities on China. I've seen a story this past week interest in visitor and immigrant visas to Canada from China has decreased dramatically since they held one of the Huawei vice chairman or certainly one of the leaders of Huawei from China was held in Canada for prosecution in the U.S. So Chinese are taking it out on Canada in terms of their interest in going there for immigration and visas, visitors visas. Not sure on the student front, but certainly it's a recognition that too many destination countries, particularly English-speaking destination countries, are overly dependent on China. We know that in the U.S. They realize that in Australia. Certainly they do in the U.K. and Canada, I think, as well. Canada's recently come out with a new diversity plan, their new international education strategy to radically diversify their international population. So we're going to see a lot of folks are waking up to the potential dangers of over-reliance on one or two countries. And certainly the U.S. is no institutions in the U.S. certainly are ones that are very keen to, hopefully, those that are aware of what's going on in the world, certainly aware of the value of diversification of their international student populations. Glad to see Marjorie joining in from University of Denver. Hope all is well with you in the Rocky Mountain State. And looking forward to chatting with you all again in the coming weeks as these news stories develop. Certainly for those who want to see the archive of these, you can check them out on our Facebook page under the Videos tab or on our YouTube channel for SMIE Consulting. All the archive of these going back a year now are available on a playlist on our YouTube channel. So please check them out there. And if you're subscribing on the podcast, thank you again for listening. Karen Bauer, glad to have you on live today. And I hope that you're finding these roundups valuable for you in your work with Education USA as well. So that's all for today, and we look forward to catching up with you in the days and weeks to come. Cheers.